Charu Das here, and welcome to another in the study session series of Bhagavad Gita As It Is. Today's verse is the sixth verse in the third chapter. The third chapter is entitled Karma Yoga. I'll read the Sanskrit and then the English. Karmendriyani samyamya yashte manasa smaran indriyatan vimudatma mitya charaha sauchate. Translation: one who restrains the senses of action but whose mind dwells on sense objects certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Commentary in just a moment. We talked about Sankaracharya, the head of the Mayavadi, the impersonalistic school of philosophers in India. Sankaracharya's theory was that as long as you're involved in any way whatsoever with the workaday world, you can't understand spiritual life. Mayavadis define spiritual life as the very opposite of material life. Now, if you really think about it, to negate material life doesn't establish a positive spiritual fact. And so they're whole philosophy, their whole school of thought is based on a fallacy anyway. And so therefore when Sankaracharya says that until one accepts the renounced order of life, he can't understand spirit, we reject that. That it doesn't require to separate yourself from the phenomenal world in order to understand spirit. After all, the spiritual world is a world full of variety also. There are houses in the spiritual world. There's grass, trees, birds, and people. The only difference is they're spiritual. In this material world, the houses, grasses, trees, and people all have material coverings. In the spiritual world, matter is conspicuous by its absence. Otherwise, they look very similar. So this material world, the phenomenal world, is not only not a hindrance in understanding spiritual life, it is a positive aid. Someone said, matter is a dictionary to spirit. If you see the shadow of a tree on the water, you can learn a lot about the original tree. Now, there's certain things that you can't do with the shadow. You can't eat fruits. You can't smell the fragrance. But at least because the shadow has form, you can infer that the real tree has form. Because this phenomenal world has form and variegatedness, we, personless, conclude that the spiritual world has form and variegatedness. More than that, the spiritual world is the source of the form and variegatedness of which this material world reveals perverted reflections. So the material world, while not to be embraced for itself, while not to be exploited or enjoyed for oneself, is meant to be used in the service of God. And that's the reality of this material world. Although it is temporary, and therefore you'll not get any permanent position or satisfaction out of trying to exploit or enjoy material nature for yourself because of its temporariness, still, you will get eternal benefit by using this stuff, the temporary stuff of this material world, in the service of he to whom it belongs. And if you take a position that this material world is false and deny it, you are denying the creation of God and becoming an offender in your mind. And the proof of that is that all these big sannyasis, these men in India who take vows of renunciation, who promise never to have anything more again to do with this material world, who go trudging off in the northerly direction to live a life of seclusion in the Himalayas, always, practically without exception, after a month, a year, or a few years, come trudging back into the cities, into the marketplace, into the crowd, because they couldn't maintain their position of renunciation. The karmanam anarambam naiskarmyam purushnoshnute. Krishna says, a man cannot refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. If the nature of the soul is active, you have to decide, is the soul active or is it passive? Obviously it's active. Every living being is full of activity. We come from God. We possess in minute quantity the same qualities that He has. Therefore God, the Absolute Truth, is active. Not impersonal, personal, active. And we're also active. So to stop activity is impossible. That's why the sannyasis, after saying Brahma Satyam Jagat Mityam, this Jagat, this phenomenal world is false, Mitya, Brahman, or truth, or the light is the only reality, and they forsake this so-called false material world for the light, eventually end up forsaking the light for this false material world. That means that both of them are false. To enjoy matter independently is false, and to think of oneself as part of the light or as merging, that is also false. The reality is that this material world has value insofar as it's seen as the property of God. We have individuality. We have real ego, personality, so far we are connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's the value of a sannyasi who goes off, gives up the material world, and then again falls down in the material world? Even if he, you know, opens hospitals and schools, etc., etc., that's nice, but the government is already doing that. It's not spiritual. One sannyasi in New York, he was smoking. He was claiming that he was renounced, and at the same time he's attached to nicotine. One has to inevitably catch oneself in these kinds of contradictions if one says the Absolute Truth is impersonal. Because you cannot live that. You cannot live it. If the Absolute Truth is impersonal, there's no need for you and me to be talking one to another as human beings. There's no need for food. There's no need for money. It's all one. Therefore, there's no need for any activity or any variegatedness. Now, who can live a life like that? You've got to become active. You're going to get bored, ultimately, trying to pursue an impersonal realization of the Absolute Truth. Real sannyas, real renunciation, does not mean to give up activities. It means to give up material activities and adopt spiritual activities in favor of the Lord. This is real renunciation. Sometimes the Mayavadis, they take a vow of silence. There is one Mayavadi who's got a lot of followers in the Western countries now, and he hasn't spoken for 40 years. He writes on a piece of paper. Because their philosophy is, why speak? What's the use? It's all one. We also take a vow of silence, the personalists, the devotees. We vow to be silent about material activities. We vow not to talk about girls, the latest style motor car, what the politicians are doing today. We vow to become silent as far as material life is concerned, but when it comes to Krishna, oh, we babble like a brook, like a flowing stream. You can't shut us up. We have so much to say about Krishna and the spiritual world that you can't practically stop us. We're overflowing with topics that have to do with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's how you keep your senses free from material engagement. Not by denying them. The force of the senses is very strong. Just like trying to control your senses or suppress your senses is like trying to stop a hurricane by holding your hands out. You can't do it. Try to take a tiger by the ears. The senses are that strong. They're like tigers. They will not be repressed. Take a child who's doing nonsense all around the house. He's just active, full of energy, and totally mischievous. Now you can suppress him for a while. You say, sit down. By the force of your anger, you can say, sit down there and don't do anything. He'll do that for 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. How long can he do it? As soon as your back is turned, as soon as he gets, he's again up to mischief. So by force, you can repress the senses for a little while. But eventually they rebound with more ferocity than ever before. Just like you keep a snake in a basket, a poisonous snake. You might think that the longer you keep them in the basket, the more submissive and subdued he's going to be. Not so. You're making a fatal error of judgment. The longer you keep that snake in the basket, the more vicious he's going to be when you finally take the lid off. And when you do finally take the lid off, pong, he's so full of hate and resentment that's been building up, he immediately strikes out and kills you. We're active. And therefore, spiritual life means not to be inactive, not to go off to the Himalayas and make a show of renunciation, and at the same time be thinking within the mind of sense gratification all the time. Spiritual life means to take your propensity to be active and exercise it in a pure way in Krishna consciousness. Take a glass. The glass is sitting in an inky atmosphere. Because it's in an inky atmosphere, it fills up with ink. You empty the ink out, upright the glass. The atmosphere is inky, it fills up with ink again. However many times you empty out the glass because the atmosphere is dirty, it fills up with ink again. The atmosphere in this material world is dirty. Everyone's selfish. No one wants to recognize the supremacy of God. No one wants to follow His laws. And when all such dirty-minded people associate with each other, the forgetfulness of God, the atheism, becomes locked up, very strong. So if you want to immunize yourself, if you want to be in this world and not affected by the atmosphere, you have to fill yourself up with, you have to busy yourself with some transcendental activity. If you want that glass no longer to be filled with ink in the inky atmosphere, you have to fill it with some superior substance, like milk. Once the glass is filled with milk, no ink can come in. Similarly, once you're engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord, in building temples for the Lord, in preaching about the Lord in public assemblies, in cooking huge feasts, and sponsoring holidays, and providing employment for people in the temple and in jobs which will provide capital for spreading the glories of the Lord, then you're free from material life. Do you doubt that there's enough employment in the service of God? Do you doubt that? Well, let me just give you an indication that it is in the material world that employment dries up. For a few years during an industrial revolution, and as long as America is coming out with new discoveries, there's employment for people. Actually, where is most of the employment in the United States of America today provided? Much of the employment is in the war industries, isn't it? So this is certainly an artificial type of employment, to employ so many people for making weapons, which will lead to the ultimate destruction. Self-genocide. Someone said the human species is the only species on the planet that systematically commits genocide against itself. And that is the basis of much of our employment in the modern world. You talk about the need to industrialize, you talk about the need of technology, you talk about how you're creating jobs, but you're artificially creating jobs. Actually, in material life, unemployment is inevitable. Once the bomb, you may brag about you're only 8 or 10% unemployed now, but in the future everyone will be unemployed. Everybody will be walking around with radiation sickness and holes in their eye sockets where their eyes used to be, scabs all over their body with not a damn thing to do except die. And even now, you have 10% unemployed. One man in every 10 doesn't got work to do. In India, the villager thinks of work as being such a sacred occupation that he will approach a wealthy man and ask, "Will you give me the benediction of work?" The man says, "Well, I don't have anything to pay you." "I don't want pay. I want work. I don't want to be idle. I don't want my mind to be deteriorated by idleness. Just give me something to do. Give me the dignity of work. If you feel that after seeing me work and I'm doing something, you can give me some food if you like. But even if you don't feed me, I've got to have work." In the so-called advanced technological countries, 10% of the people are unemployed. And many of those are so-called highly trained white-collar workers also. But in spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness, unemployment will be reduced to zero. And we will not be courting disaster either, because spiritual activities like singing, dancing, chanting are not the kind of activities that lead you to the brink of a world holocaust. Just the opposite. They instill harmony, peace, tranquility, equanimity. We put on a festival in Venice Beach in Los Angeles every August, and we employ hundreds and hundreds of people to put on this festival. There are three stages with continuous entertainment. There are big top tents. There are elephants, dramas, puppet shows, exhibits, food booths, free food, food for sale. And on that one day in Venice Beach, the police say that although there's more people in Venice Beach that day than any other day of the year, about 250,000 people, there's less crime than at any other time. With smaller crowds, there's more crime.
Why?
Krishna consciousness is not there. Krishna consciousness makes things white and pure automatically. Employment. There's one temple in India called the Jagannath Temple in Puri. Every day they offer food to the deity 56 times. 56 offerings per day. That's a lot of cooks and a lot of pot washers. And after they've made 56 offerings to the deity during the course of each and every day, there's a lot of extra nice prasadam, vegetarian food to feed the pilgrims, the hundreds of thousands of pilgrims who come into that city every day in order to get the sight of the deity. So there will be no problem about unemployment in a spiritually oriented culture in Krishna consciousness. This is called karma yoga. Remaining in the world, not denying the world, rather embracing the world, embracing the opportunity of this material body, this material world, because it facilitates devotional service to the Lord. The other path of renunciation, thinking that the absolute truth is impersonal or void, is a totally artificial path because the senses will not be denied. In fact, it's dangerous to try to repress the senses. It's dangerous. You can, on the one hand, try to let them go like a Hitler. Hitler wanted the government to be run like he wanted, and he wouldn't stop until everything was like he wanted. In other words, he wanted to cater to the dictates of his senses. And Winston Churchill said, no, we're not going to run it like Hitler, we're going to run it like I want. Hitler wanted his sense gratification, Churchill wanted his sense gratification and clash. And if you examine the history of the Western world for the last 2,000 years or more, it's only been the history of sense gratification. If you want to go to hell, you need a leader. If you want to go to heaven, you need a leader. Whether you're going to heaven or to hell, you need a leader. And in the last 2,000 or 3,000 years in the Western countries, all the leaders have been blind. All the leaders have wanted is their own sense gratification to run things the way they want it. And therefore, you can count hundreds and hundreds of wars. Right now, there are over 40 wars going on in the face of the globe because of this sense gratification. Then there's the class of men who see how much trouble it is to enjoy the senses, how much trouble it is to exploit this material world, and they want to give it up. Realizing that sense gratification causes so much trouble, they give it up and they say, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mitam. This material world is false, they deny it, and spirit is true. And then they try to merge with God, to become one with God. Failing to be the little tiny enjoyers, out of frustration they try to merge and become one with the supreme enjoyer. Whether you try to exploit material nature or whether you try to reject it, it is all sense gratification. It is all sense gratification, and the only platform where you're free from your own personal sense gratification is when you're engaged in gratifying the senses of the Lord. There is no position where there is not sense gratification. Either in material life there's sense gratification, or spiritual life there's sense gratification. The choice is not there. The availability is not there to void existence, soul, life of sense gratification. The only choice is really, are you going to stuff everything in your mouth? Are you going to try to enjoy everything, falsely taking the position of God? Or are you going to recognize that there is only one unlimited enjoyer? There is only one proprietor of everything. There is only one source of us all. He is also our well-wishing friend, and when we render service to Him, He reciprocates with us. When we realize this, then we come to the platform of spiritual sense gratification. But sense gratification is there in any case. The choice remains to us whether we're going to satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord or whether we're going to try to cram unlimited amounts of sense enjoyment into our own body and thus make ourselves sick and sinful in the process.
You've been listening to commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of India's Vedic wisdom and one of the great spiritual and philosophical classics of the world. The ultimate conclusion of the Gita is unconditional loving surrender unto Lord Krishna, which frees one from all sins, bringing one to complete enlightenment and enables one to return to Krishna's eternal spiritual abode.